Taxes Show.
Today's show is brought to you by the Brothers Karamazov.
Not the book, the actual brothers themselves.
They love Eric and wanted to support him, so they decided to sponsor the show.
Is that not amazing?
And Dostoevsky doesn't know a thing about it.
And he invented them.
Now your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. Welcome back to my conversation with Roger Stone. Roger, we were talking about the Nixon tattoo on your back. That's the kind of thing I would make up, frankly, because I have a bizarre sense of humor. You may know that I wrote a biography of William Wilberforce, the man who abolished the slave trade in the British Empire, called books called Amazing Grace. And in it, one of his confreres was Josiah Wedgwood, who created a special medal because they believed in using the culture to advance the cause of abolition. It wasn't just politics, it was the culture. And speaking of Wedgwood and Nixon, I have a Wedgwood Nixon plate. I don't know if there's any way to get it to register on camera. It's going to be very hard. There we go. Anyway, it's. I just wanted you to know that there are lots of crazy people in the world, not just you.
No. Oh, first of all, Wedgwood has a deep tradition. It was a company. It was a genre and company that produced these things for Eisenhower and so on. And it's for those of you who like Nixoniana, which I collect, you can go to eBay and you buy many of these items. Oftentimes I buy anti-Nixon pop culture items, posters, bongs, rolling papers, wanted posters, all kind of biker posters, because it was in that kind of psychedelic light poster, right, counterculture stuff. I have an enormous collection of Nixoniana, meaning both things, both for him and against him. More as a study of pop culture art. And at some point, I hope to open a museum, not about Nixon, but about Nixon's prominence in the pop culture in this 40-year career, because the cartoons against him are just as funny and kind of entertaining as some of the other stuff. So
absolutely.
At some point, I'd like to do a pop-up library and leave it open for a couple months, but it's a vigorous project, and I've got two books to write, and we have to get through a presidential campaign. So
yeah, you're busy. Let me ask you: is it possible for you to be involved in this campaign with everything you've been through? We've only got what, a couple of 7 weeks left.
I think only with my voice to comment and criticize. Any advice that I would offer the president or those on my side, they can very simply get by reading the stuff I'm writing and saying in various interviews, including this one. I mean, the Trump campaign has a campaign ad on, which correctly appeals to African Americans. It's now up in urban markets. It gives the president the credit he deserves for the Second Chance Act and Alice Johnson. But, while it does mildly hit Joe Biden, it doesn't really pinpoint his role in being the architect of the modern day turbocharged war on drugs, which by any measure has been a social, moral, economic failure, where you are incarcerating people for the first time, nonviolent crime of possession of small amounts of drugs. And the judge has no ability to look at the circumstances of the case. Talk about the woman with three children, a fatherless woman who's working two jobs to support her family, gets 25 years because a tiny amount of marijuana is found in her purse. Now, the judge should be able to say, you know, I'm sentencing you to drug counseling and assistance. I'm putting you on probation for 18 months so they can keep an eye on you. But I'm not going to throw you in jail for 25 years, thanks to Joe Biden.
How is it possible? I mean, this brings up the question of federal government overreach. One of the ideas of the genius founders was the idea of keeping government as local as possible, giving the states a lot of power. It seems that every single time that we have either the federal government or the Supreme Court mandate something for the entire nation, it goes dramatically awry. How is it possible that the federal government can do a thing like that? I'm just fascinated.
Well, first of all, we have a, there's a division in our federal government, although the president is theoretically running the country, and that his policies should are what we are following. He has deep in the bowels of both bureaucracy and, unfortunately, in his own administration, particularly people in the national security area who were in favor of his removal in two coup attempts and who ill serve him now because he never cleaned house in what was a neocon administration where you had many holdovers from the previous neocon administration. Many times the same people in the same job. The presidency may change, but the deep state bureaucracy continues in place. And sometimes they even, in a treasonous way, as in the case of the two brother naval officers, they lie, they defy the command, the chain of command, to bear false witness against the president for political purposes.
Well, I'm more concerned really with the idea that when this happened in the 90s, the idea that the federal government could tell judges across the United States, here's what you must do, no wiggle room, that just strikes me as fundamentally unconstitutional.
Let's understand the genesis of this law. Bill Clinton was trying to get reelected, and Dick Morris said, pin on the sheriff's badge. And he said, what do you mean? He said, come in with the toughest anti-drug legislation you can, and peddle it very hard. And remember, Hillary Clinton says we've got a, she denigrates these people. She attacks them. Bill Clinton says that this is vitally necessary. Joe Biden, who's the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, writes this monstrosity. He proudly calls it the Biden bill. It's also, it is technically the 1994 crime bill. And these policies are racist. They have fallen disproportionately.
It's a funny thing because I hate it when people talk about policies or anything being racist or systemic racism because it seems to confuse the issue. But if anything can be said to be that, this seems to be that. When you incarcerate a woman with three kids, no husband, for possession of a drug.
Look at the raw numbers. The penalties have fallen disproportionately on people of color. So this is not conjecture. That ergo, where are the white people guilty of this crime? We know they exist. Crime. So this has fallen disproportionately on the. It's bad policy. You are taking people who are not violent criminals. You are with no previous record. You are incarcerating them for long periods of time. You're destroying families. You're destroying lives because there's no rehabilitation going on, and you're costing taxpayers billions of dollars at this point to incarcerate and feed people who are not violent criminals nor a danger to society. Drug abuse is a public health issue. These people should be in public health programs. They should be monitored because you spend money on that. They should be given probation. We're not, but if the judge is smart enough to see that you have three armed robbery arrests in your previous rap sheet and you get caught using having a small amounts of drugs and it's against the law, he's probably right to put you away. But not if you have no previous convictions.
Well, so the question is, will the president and his campaign be able to tag Biden sufficiently with this so that African-Americans in particular, libertarians and others would see that this is a big part of his record?
Well, first of all, this is not vodka.
Thank you for establishing that.
Remember when Jackie Gleason used to say he would come out with a coffee cup, which everybody knew was booze, and he would drink out of it and he would bellow, "How sweet it is." And that's how he opened every show. It was kind of the signature line. Anyway, that was not that. That was really just water.
I was a huge fan of Jackie Gleason. I always want to end on a perplexing note. We'll be right back. Final segment with Roger Stone. Hey, Hey there, folks. I continue my conversation, final segment with Roger Stone. Roger, we could talk about so many things, but since we're facing this election right now, we were just talking about Joe Biden. A couple days ago, I had Bill O'Reilly on the program, and he thought that, in fact, Biden would not be a front for the most radical ideas in the party, which I have been saying. He said he thought David Axelrod and Obama and Hillary Clinton, that those are the people, in fact, behind the scenes. Do you think that that's possible? Bill O'Reilly is tremendously astute, so I wondered what you would think of that.
I think that is essentially correct, but the problem is the center of gravity in their party among primary voters, once in thrall with those people you just mentioned, has moved to their left, where progressives today believe that Obama was not a liberal, could have solved all these problems, didn't do anything about cannabis, didn't do anything about the criminal justice system, persisted in pursuing all the foreign wars that he said he was going to close down. Gitmo, still open. Oh, what did his voters say about that? I mean, Obama talks a great game, kind of like Bush, but in the end, you get one epic chain of the same policies. Endless war, erosion of our civil liberties, denigration of our Christian values, immigration policies that are broken, fiscal policies that destroy any sense of entrepreneurship, that punish people who are entrepreneurs, with tax rates that are confiscatory, at the same time just running debt out. Anytime that we need money, we hit the printing presses. I mean, it's, you know, this is, we've had an unbroken chain of this until 2016. And as we move away from these policies, everything but the kitchen sink is being thrown at Donald Trump. At a time when I think the country needs him more than ever before.
I agree strongly. To me, the worst part of several administrations behaving in the way that you've just describing is that it erodes the confidence of the citizenry. In other words, the idea that we, the people, are governing ourselves, when you see politicians in a sense continuing the same policy, saying what they need to say, it creates a cynicism. And I really think that that kind of cynicism is the death of American-style self-government. The people have to really believe that this is our government. We're going to have some problems, but we do have to believe that our leaders are doing what we ask them to do. They're doing the right thing. And I think that that has been eroding significantly. The press and the left helped it erode under Nixon with Watergate and Vietnam. But it's been happening ever since then, so that we're at a place right now where that's my greatest fear, is that people begin to think the way they do in socialist, corrupt countries, like nothing matters, who cares, I just do what I can do for myself.
That's the great danger of internet censorship. In other words, the idea that I think that it was only the rise of a vibrant, robust alternative media based in the internet that Trump's rise was even possible. His election is a near miracle. I think that it is mostly attributed to his being an internet phenomena that was able to break through in a way that nobody saw. They now recognize that. That's why we have this mountain of censorship of conservatives, Republicans, Christians, independents, libertarians, anyone who is not a liberal, anyone who is a supporter of the president, is slowly finding themselves shadow banned, or in my case and many others, banned outright, because they don't want to hear our truth. They certainly don't want to hear our truth about God, never mind all of our values. These are the people who are being systematically shut down in terms of communicating. There's a purpose for this. This is part of the strategy of limiting our megaphone, our amplifier, during a presidential campaign. So that's why people of goodwill have to watch this program, get the link to it if you are interested in what we have to say here or anything else about the program, and send it to your friends, because they can silence me. God forbid they sometimes silence you. For all I know, they are. They are a shadow banning you because you're a fine, upstanding Christian gentleman who believes in America first, who happens to be particularly well turned out, I might add. So it's an incredible time. Plus, we've never, as I said earlier, we've never had violence in the streets, street thugs trying to back up what appears to me to be a coming attempt to fraudulently steal the presidency of the United States, as opposed to having an honest, fair election where whoever loses steps down and we have an orderly transition of power, which Trump has committed himself to, with the caveat being we have to have an honest election, a provably honest election, not without substantial real evidence of election fraud, which is what I expect.
I really do believe that God's hand is on this country, that he doesn't intend it to go the way whatever we want to call it, empires have gone, that we don't need to follow that path that God has, as Lincoln said, we're his almost chosen people. He's using us for his purposes around the world, flawed though we might be. And so I have confidence that there are enough people who believe in truth, who believe in self-government and liberty, and who are patriotic Americans, and who believe in the God of the Bible and his purposes, that if we pray and do what we need to do, we can overcome what faces us. But we really do have to be honest in saying that apart from God, it doesn't look good. Apart from God, we deserve to become yet another corrupt socialist country.
Well, and that's why our fate is in God's hands. That's why praying to him on a daily basis is the right course. Try to follow his certainly give us enough guidelines to try to live by. It's what gives you heart for the fight every day. Look, in 1 week, I have the mainstream media take an interview that I gave, that I stand by every word of, and twist the words to say that I urge the president to declare martial law if he lost the election, when what I said was I urged him to use both the Insurrection Act and declare martial law if there was overwhelming and blatant and flagrant evidence of election fraud, as would be his legal right as the sitting president of the United States.
I mean, it wouldn't just be his legal right. It would really be his obligation, but the left is going to try to spin it like Hitler after the Reichstag fire.
Well, particularly if while bands of thugs are moving out of the urban areas into the suburban areas, clubbing people, robbing them, burning their homes, torching their cars, as they have announced that they will do. That would be unprecedented, but that is what BLM and Antifa have in mind. So the voter intimidation at the polls by armed thugs, no, that's not going to be coming from Trump supporters or Proud Boys or militia members or Tea Parties or anyone I know. That's a myth. The left always projects on you what they exactly are doing. Hillary Clinton's paying for phony dossiers with Russian asset assistance and whitewashing, laundering the payments, yet they accuse Trump and his associates, and yours truly, of Russian collusion that they can't prove to this day exists. So it is extraordinary.
On the face of it, I mean, it's so strange. I cannot imagine why they continue to do that. The question for me, it always comes down to the media. In other words, whatever the facts are, if you can't get the facts out so that people can make a fair choice, you're done. And we know that the Long March Through the Institutions has taken over the media to an extent that it was unthinkable even 10 years ago that they could be this biased. They've become so utterly biased. And then now, of course, with the tech giants, It is a huge problem, and I think that if Trump does win, which I believe by God's grace he will, we have to begin focusing on those issues as well, because you cannot have a democracy unless you have a free press.
Well, it's true, but I've just never seen in 40 years of American politics, I've never seen this level of distortion by supposedly reputable journalists. Let me make this point, which is for 40 years, any major reporter who ever mentioned my name in a piece or was reporting on me pretty much gave me the courtesy of contacting me for comment. They teach you that in journalism school. It's journalism 101 among all veteran reporters.
We've just got 10 seconds left. Forgive me, Roger. Go ahead.
Since the time of my arrest, not my conviction, my arrest, it is a handful of news organizations that reach out to me for comment when they're about to report on me, which may be one reason why 80% of the stories written are negative, either by omission or willfully. I've never seen this level of deceit. That's what I'm saying.
Forgive me. I'm so sorry we're out of time. Roger, we will have you back as soon as possible. Thank you so much.
God bless you, and thank you for your opportunity to get with you.
Come and saying something about a queen. There were peasants singing and drummers drumming, and the archers split the tree.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Eric Metaxas Show. I apologize in advance for the views of the host, but here's the good news. I interview people who are not me. For example, Dennis Prager. Dennis, can I interview you right now? You're a fellow Salem host. Can we talk?
I am you.
Oh.
You said you interview people who are not you. I am you.
We have similar views. I'm a goy. You're not a goy.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am Eric Metaxas.
Yes, you're a friend, and we think similarly, which is scary, which is why they have to keep us separated. But the point is that you and I like to talk about current events, and it just so happens we are both in a film called Trump 2024. People can go to salemnow.com. If you use my code Eric, they give you a 20% discount on the film. Salemnow.com. The film is Trump 2024. Now, Dennis, we're both in the film, but you know, the title Trump 2024, I think, is unnecessarily frightening to Trump haters because they think this means that he's going to run again in 2024. Don't you think that that's possible that people are thinking that?
I think that the people who hate Donald Trump, I don't mean differ with him, but hate him, would believe anything. If the title were Emperor Trump,
yeah,
they would believe that we are making a movie about an emperor, that we are reconstituting the Holy Roman Empire.
Right. You know what? This is a great idea. I love the idea of that. When I was at the convention, I'm always the one trying to chant 8 more years just to freak people out, but it doesn't catch on. So, but Dennis, the reason we both appeared in Trump 2024, obviously, since I know you, I can speak for you, that we really feel that this is the most important election of our lifetimes because we have, in a sense, pushed things. It's kind of like when you're running out of gas and you're on fumes, you can't pretend that you still have a quarter tank of gas. You're in trouble. You need to make some decisions. I think that's why both of us feel urgently about this election. Perhaps you will add to that.
I like your analogy to the car with fumes. America is running on the fumes of its value system. That is correct. And by the way, its value system, I have defined. I don't like talking in any generalized way without specifics. The American Trinity is our value system. I gave it the name, but I didn't make up the values. They're on every coin, every bill. Liberty, e pluribus unum, and God we trust. The left hates all three of them. This is the undoing of America is on the ballot. I never engage in hyperbole. The only other time I ever said this is the most important election of our lifetime was the last election. I was sure that this would not be the most important, but it turns out it is. It's not about Trump. It is not about Biden. It is a referendum on America.
Well, again, as I've said many times, I'm very sorry to agree with that point of view because I so wish it weren't the case. I so wish that it were, you know, 1984 or something like that, where where we still had a lot of gas in the tank. But it does seem to me that the left, with the, you know, sloppiness and laziness and lack of courage on the right, has brought us to the edge of the cliff where we've really got to either pull back or we go over, and that's, it's game over. It's a long way down. It's not like we can crawl back up in the next election or 10. It would be over. That's always my argument, and it's why I'm fascinated with the so-called Never Trumpers who claim to care about conservative values but don't seem to understand that we will never get to talk about them again. They seem to live in a world where it doesn't matter who becomes Supreme Court justice. It doesn't matter if you have 4 years, not just of a, in this case, a cipher, a Potemkin, one man Potemkin village, but you have an entire administration that's going to be pushing us away from the values that we know are necessary. What do you suppose, because I know you've thought of this, what do you suppose those folks are really thinking? Are they just missing something, a huge blind spot? How can they believe it's possible to survive 4 years of somebody like a Clinton or a Biden?
It so interests me that you said that. We just opened up by saying how similarly we think. We not only think similarly, we're stupefied similarly, which is really fascinating, because I'm sure when you said it, you thought maybe Dennis does have an explanation.
I was hoping.
Dennis does not. Do you know that I debated Brett Stephens? He wrote a column against me. I wrote a column in response. He invited me onto the New York Times a website to do a Facebook a debate. I don't understand how George Will, Jonah Goldberg, and Brett Stephens. I mean, these are three people I know love this country. They don't understand, with all their intelligence, what is at stake. Who cares about Trump's personality?
We're going to go to break here, and we will just continue. This is very important. By the way, folks, go to salemnow.com. Trump 2024 is there. If you use the code ERIC, you get a discount. We'll be right back. Hey, folks, I'm talking to Dennis Prager. And now, Dennis, I have to comment, if people are watching this on video, you look like a middle manager in corporate America. You're sitting there with your white shirt with something behind you. It looks like some kind of I don't know if it's a machine or a file cabinet. It's actually very funny. Where are you, sir?
I am in the ugliest Salem studio in the entire network of Salem Radio.
That's saying a lot. Come on, really?
Yeah, no, it is. That's right. It is saying a lot, and I'm aware of that. Actually, this nondescript closet behind me holds the nuclear codes. That's why it's so nondescript.
I see. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Well, we're talking about this film that's been made called Trump 2024. It's a documentary. You and I are both in it. I play the role, and people won't believe it, but I play the role of Hitler's half-brother, Alois Hitler, who ran a restaurant in Berlin. The SS would love to go there, and Bonhoeffer and his girlfriend, on their only date, they went there. I play the role of Alois Hitler, and I have a small, people won't recognize me, I have a small World War I upturned mustache. I'm behind the bar cleaning glasses, and I just look around, and then the camera moves on. But you play yourself in this film.
I play the role of a very tall waitress.
It's hard to make me actually laugh. That is very, very, very funny. That is beautiful. In a dirndl, in a dirndl that was bought in a shop for transvestites, obviously. Well, let me just ask you, my friend, just to stay on substance here, since
we're in danger. Which is very hard for us.
I know, in danger of getting silly. You and I are in the film Trump 2024 because we believe this is an important election. But did you ever think, and I really am being serious, that we could see what we're seeing now? I mean, you, on the one hand, you have, I said, the one-man Potemkin village. I mean, have you ever seen a candidate? It's like the Manchurian candidate. No one has any idea whether Joe Biden can think without special drugs, or whether he has an opinion, or will just say whatever, or who would in fact be running the country if, God forbid, he were elected. You know, that's number one. Number two, we have our cities burning, and we have Democratic leaders effectively doing nothing, seeming to side with the maniacs. We have this COVID thing, which has turned into something like a hoax, because at this point, you would think there would be some sanity about how to deal with it. These are the strangest times that certainly I can remember in my lifetime. And so I'm just wondering, where do you see us going between now and the election?
I don't make predictions. I've always been preoccupied with what do I have to do, not what will happen. I know that I am morally bound to work as hard as possible to see to it that the left does not gain control of the Senate, loses control of the House, and does not make it to the White House. I say I've said this all of my life. I've written a book on it. The book is Still the Best Hope, and it is about the American Trinity, and the left. It's a great, it's a huge explanation of the left. The left, I have studied since a graduate school. I was at the Russian Institute at the School of International Affairs at Columbia, studied Russian. I read Pravda every day. And I never thought that what I learned in my specialty of communism would apply to America. This shocks me. So people should understand everything the left touches, it destroys. Art, music, education, universities, sports, late night television, child rearing, everything the left touches, it destroys. And the next, its biggest challenge has been to destroy America. But they admit it. They say we want to fundamentally transform the United States of America. This is now, Biden has said this over and over. They all now say it in the Democratic Party. You fundamentally transform is the same as destroy. That's what fundamentally transform means.
Well,
now vote accordingly.
We've had some of these Antifa BLM gangs chanting death to America, which is a little bit on the nose. I would tell them just to pull it back slightly.
Right. Death Don't to America. Be so honest.
It's a little too much, but they're not smart enough to be nuanced. They can't spell nuance. So the fact is we're dealing with something we have never seen before, an open hatred of just about everything that's good. It's really bizarre. My hope is that most Americans are taking notes and will vote, will go to the polls in November.
Eric, one of the things that has actually struck me was this. I also did not expect. I was certain, because of my study of totalitarianism, I was certain that the media could only brainwash a population in an unfree country. And I was wrong. We are now witnessing the brainwashing of a country in a free country, which gives you an idea of how powerful media influence is.
Well, I guess it depends what we mean by free, right? In other words, you and I both know that freedom is something that if I don't govern myself, I can choose wittingly or unwittingly not to be free. I can be governed from without if I don't do certain things. And I feel that, I mean, that's my big thing, is to say that if you want to be free, you have to do some things. If you want not to be free, you don't have to do much. You just have to do what people tell you. But it takes something to be free. And I think that over the last 50 or so years, we have been slowly acclimatized to being less and less free. That's the only way we've gotten to the point where we could be ignorant enough to accept some of the things we're seeing.
Yeah, I know that. Look, another thing I've said constantly, freedom is not an instinct. Freedom is a value. That's the reason we have a liberty bell. We don't have a breathing bell. Breathing comes naturally. Liberty is a value, and people rather be taken care of than be free.
Well, yes, bad people.
People
who lack courage. Well, okay, we're going to go to a break and we'll come back. And Dennis and I will continue talking about Trump 2024. You can find it at salemnow.com. Salemnow.com, a bunch of movies. If you use my code Eric, you get a discount. I hope you'll check it out. Hey, folks, welcome back. I'm talking to Dennis Prager. We're both in a film called Trump 2024. It's a remake of the Smokey and the Bandit films. You play the role. Who's the big guy? The big guy. I play the Paul Williams part, and you play the big guy, Pat. You know who he is. He was
the big
just
guy, King Kong.
No, he was just one of the great comedy writers of all time. He worked for Johnny Carson, all kinds of people. And you play him, and I play the Paul Williams part. And anyway, it's a fun movie, Trump 2024. It's a kooky thing. We race to see who can be president, and the election is in November. I hope you'll tune in, folks. So you can go to salemnow.com. Actually, I'm reading it wrong. It's a documentary. Dennis, we appear in a documentary. We play ourselves. If somebody says to you, hey, I don't know what to think anymore, why should I vote for Trump? What do you say to that person?
Well, there's really one issue on the ballot. It's not Trump. It's not Biden. It's left or America. That's it. If you deny that, it's because you don't want to face the reality that the left, not liberals, liberals have loved America. If the Democratic Party were composed of liberals, we would not say this is the most important election in American history or since the Civil War. But it's not. It's composed of leftists, and leftists want to destroy what we have. They think that America is fundamentally evil. I believe America is not only fundamentally good, but we created the most decent society in human history in the United States of America, and they are wrecking it. Because they can't recognize good if it hit them in the face. To call America systemically racist, who has not been systemically racist? Why aren't there demonstrations in Brazil? Brazil got 12 million African slaves. America got 340,000. The United States got 3 million immigrants from Africa in the last 20 years. 2 million from Africa, 1 million blacks from the Caribbean. Why did they come here if it's systemically racist? Would a Jew move to Iran? Iran is systemically anti-Semitic. Are any Jews leaving France and going to Iran? The Jews of France are leaving France, but they're going to Israel and the United States and Canada. Why don't they go to Iran? Because it is systemically bigoted. America loves black people. Nigerians earn more money than the whites who are told have privileges. What happened to white privilege vis-a-vis Nigerians? Actually, if you're a black who comes to America and your family is intact, you have privilege. It's the privilege of a family and an American. The best two privileges you could have.
Have you ever thought of being a radio talk show host? Because just now, as you rattled off those facts, I thought, I wish I had a job to offer you. You're very good.
Thank you. Thank you. Consider me if there's an opening.
I will, because I'm about to jump out the window. You can have my job, sir. No, actually, you've got a much better job than I. You've been doing this for so long. You've got zillions of listeners. How many stations are you on at this point, Dennis? Really, you're just all over the world.
Yeah, you know what? Well, between PragerU and the radio show, I do feel it's all over the world. I'm very touched.
It is all over the world.
Look, I, But you know what? It's a race against time.
Yeah.
We have 1 billion views at PragerView. I have millions of listeners. And still, we're talking about the very real possibility that America, as America, will be destroyed. So I'm torn.
I understand. Well, listen, the God of Scripture commands us to be hopeful, to do the right thing. You know
and
that,
you know
and I
what?
Know that.
The God of Scripture said one thing to humans more than any other. Do not be afraid.
Amen. We're going to have to leave it there. My friend Dennis, thank you so much. I just want to say, folks, please check out salemnow.com. Everything there, you can get a discount if you use my name, Eric, but we're talking specifically about this documentary, Trump 2024. Please check it out. And again, Dennis, thank you.
My friend.